All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to see everybody here. It's a big group here tonight. So I'll just start from the beginning. I was born in 1982 in California, Sacramento. That makes me almost 30 years old. I'm going to be an old man this year, but I'm learning how to deal with it, you know. At a young age, I was wild and free when I was a little kid growing up, you know, 5 years old. I was like running around naked in the woods and playing with animals, and just that was me, man. My hair was long and curly, and my mom and dad, they were wonderful people. They raised me, you know. I got two brothers also. They raised us not to worship money, you know. They raised us kind of in the outdoors, and they showed, you know, we didn't have cable growing up, and they made us go outside when we wanted to have fun. And I think that's a big part of who I am today. So that was all good and fun until I had to start going to school and stuff. And that's when I remember, like, my whole world changed, because whenever I was around people, I got this like weird, uncomfortable feeling, like I didn't fit in with anybody. And I felt all of a sudden like I looked at it the way everybody else looked, and I felt like I looked different. And it just, all these feelings started developing where, like, by the time I was like 10 or 11 years old, I just, you know, every time I looked in the mirror, I hated myself, and I didn't know like what to do with myself. I wasn't happy. I was uncomfortable. I was weird. I didn't like the rich kids. I didn't fit in with them. And I didn't fit in with the poor kids because I wasn't poor. And so I was always like in the middle. And so I guess I became kind of a loner, you know, when I was a young kid, or at an early age. And there just came a point where I met these kids, and they were drinking, and I took a drink with them. And from that point, and the moment I took that drink, well, the moment I took like the third or fourth drink, and I started feeling the buzz, it was like, yes, you know, like this is what I've wanted my whole life, is this feeling like to fit in and to be comfortable. And that's what alcohol did for me. And so I figured that I'm just going to run with it, you know. So I did, and I started drinking when I was like 12 years old. My drinking progressed really quickly, and I started hanging out with some bad kids. I found a good little group of people who didn't have parents, or they had criminals for parents, and their brothers were criminals, and these are the people who accepted me, and that's who I wanted to be with. Because, and also they were tough, you know, and people didn't mess with them. And so, like, I figured that if I was with them, then people would think I was tough, even though I wasn't, you know, because I needed to hide behind them to be tough. So that's what I did at an early age. And you know, it just took off. Like, there's no need to even go into it. When I was 15, I caught my first handful of felonies. Literally, it was like a handful of them. I threw a rock through a window of a liquor store and ran in and stole a whole bunch of stuff. And it was basically beer and cigarettes, you know. And then I gave them to my friends. I ended up getting caught for it, and they got me for like three or four different felonies on it. So now I was 15. Now I'm like a felon, you know. I got convicted and released, and they released me, you know, to my parents' care. And that pretty much like became my MO, you know. Like, when I didn't have something I wanted, I would steal it. I would steal from my parents. I would steal from my friend's parents. I would steal from your parents. I would steal from the liquor store. I would steal from the store. And back then they had like, beer was really easy to steal, and liquor was really easy to steal. And so were tobacco products. So I just like would steal and steal and steal, man. And you know, when a little kid steals and walks around drunk all the time, he ends up getting caught, you know. And that's what I did, man. I got caught a lot. I was a horrible criminal. I was a drunk criminal, you know. How a drunk kid with no tolerance getting drunk and going off and committing crimes does not work. And that's what that was me, man. So they took me out of my parents' care when I was 15, when I was 16. I became a ward of the court, and that means that you can't let my parents like don't have control over me anymore. Now the court system does. So I started getting sent to all these group homes and facilities and institutions, and I was locked up basically. And they used to send me to these group homes, and I used to run away. And so running became like my new escape. Like besides alcohol, I found that I could try to run from my problems. So, you know, I would get locked up into these group homes, and I would, you know, like when I was going to court and when I was in juvenile hall, I would pretend like I had a good head on my shoulders, and I had a lot of love in my heart, and I had an alcohol problem and this and that. And so I'd get them to send me to these like softer type of rehabilitation group homes. And then as soon as they'd send me that, I would run, and I'd be out on the streets, homeless, and this little 15-year-old kid, man, I didn't know what I was even getting myself into. I ended up seeing like a bunch of stuff that I wish I wouldn't have seen, and the streets would always like abuse me to the point where I would turn myself in because I couldn't take it anymore. So I'd call my mom up crying and be like, "Mom, I can't handle this anymore." And then she'd like help me get the courage to turn myself in. I'd go back to jail, and then they'd send me to another place. This went on for a while until when I was 16, almost 17, I finally stayed at one, and I was locked up there till I was 18. So that was that. I went to my first meeting when I was there. And I guess that's important because that's when I decided that I was an alcoholic. They would talk about stuff like alcoholics talk about in meetings. And I was sitting there thinking, like, I really want to decide whether I was an alcoholic or not. And I looked back at my life over the last 5 years or whatever, and I realized that, like, I had to be an alcoholic because even at this moment in time, like I was, you know, about to turn 18 or something, like I felt like, you know, like I had the world on my shoulders and I didn't want to drink. And like I actually wanted to do something with my life. You know, the day I got out of this place when I was 18, on my 18th birthday, they let me out. The day I got out of that place, I had my whole life planned out and I was going to do good. My mom picked me up. I went and drank that same exact day, man, and like against every intention that I had. And so basically I knew I was an alcoholic because I was drinking when I didn't want to drink, you know? And that really screwed stuff up for me, man. It made it horrible because something in my mind like snapped to where now like I felt like I had to drink alcoholically because now I decided I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not going to quit drinking. Now I got to go full out and be a real alcoholic, you know? So I just started drinking more, and it was horrible, man. It just made my life a lot worse. So this just went on. You know, when I was 18, I got out, screwed up everything that I had set up for myself. The basic thing that would happen is like my mom would take me back in, and then, you know, and I'd make all these promises that I was going to change, and then I'd end up drinking again, and then she'd kick me out of the house, and then I'd go live with friends until they kicked me out, and then I'd always end up back on the streets committing crimes until I got locked up again, you know. And so this was just like the story of my adult life. I feel I want to take a pause and think about like I think about this a lot lately, is like the stuff like what my mother must have gone through, because I think about her like growing up and the progression of my alcoholism. You know, first she lost her son into the court system, so now she had to like two kids at home, and she had to pretend that she had a happy family with those two kids, but like the middle child is gone like in the court system somewhere. So that screwed her up in the head. And then she's like the type of person where she loves me so much that she would give me a million chances, like 100,000 million chances. She'd always give me another chance. And so, and I knew that, man, and I was such a manipulating, like conniving little kid, man, that I would take advantage of these people who would give me chances, man. And so my mom was the one who got stepped on the most, and so she like let me in, man, and like I don't know why she thought things were going to be different, but I mean, like, she'd let me into the house again, you know. She'd get in fights with, she almost got divorced with my father over me, man, because he's like, he doesn't want anything to do with me, he's trying to protect his family, and she's like insisting that he let me back in the house. So she like let me back in the house, and she'd be talking to me on the phone from work and say, "Yeah, I'm gonna come home with this big bag of groceries for you, and we're gonna cook this, and we're gonna have steak, so go get the fire ready and this and that, blah 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 blah." And then she'd come home and she'd look for me and I'm not gone. And then my brother's money's missing and my other brother's money's missing and my grandma's money's missing and I'm gone. And my mom's like, oh man, I hate this kid. I'm never going to do this again, you know. But then like 2 weeks later or a month later, she'd do the same thing for me. So she just got messed up to the point where I think it like permanently screwed her up, you know. And I have a lot of regret about that today, but I'm working on making that better, you know. So anyway, moving on, I did the same routine until when I was 25 or something, and it was 2005 or something. I don't even, the years all kind of blend together at that point. I was in a bunch of stuff with the law, and I had to go to jail, and I violated probation, and so I had this girlfriend, and I talked her into like taking me on the run. And so we went on the run, we packed up all our stuff, and she was like a young, nice girl, pretty, and like 18, and she just started going to school and college, and her mom was paying for a car and all this stuff. I talked her into like throwing everything away and coming with me, and so she like, yeah, she literally did that, man. She like gave up all of her hopes and dreams to take me on the run, man. And it turned into this journey that was just a road trip from hell, man. Like, it was horrible. It was bad, man. Like, we drove down to L.A., right? And L.A. is not even far from Sacramento. It's only like a five-hour drive. By the time we got to L.A., man, our car was missing two windshields. Like, the back windshield was completely gone. The other windshield was missing. I had to steal a car cover so that every time we parked, we could cover it so people wouldn't steal the stuff out of our car. And that was only on a five-hour trip, you know? So you can imagine, like, what else we did, man. It got hectic, man. And we ran out of money. We ran out of money quick. And then I taught her how to hustle and steal and beg for money and sell stuff and steal stuff. And, like, this is what we turned into, man. And, like, I felt like I was her protector and, like, I was training her or something. You know, I was in this delusion, man. Like, I don't even know what I was doing. It was delusional. But I was on this run, and so we kept on running, man. And so we took off out of L.A. and went through, like, Nevada and then up through Oregon and Washington and all these different states. And so we got down to Phoenix, Arizona. And in Phoenix, Arizona, we were, like, tired and worn out and stuff. So we were going to try to get ourselves back together, you know, and get our lives together and, like, get jobs and this and that. And then we ended up getting into this big, like, thing with these people, and they burned our car down and they set it on fire. So we kind of stole from them, and then they caught us stealing from them. So when we came back one day, and like literally like the fire department and the police and everybody's there, and our car is just in metal shell, you know. And that was like our home, you know. All our stuff was in it, and our our tents and our sleeping bags, man, and everything was in there. So we were just like, oh my God, we were already burnt out, man. So we started walking out of Phoenix. First of all, we were scared, man, that these people were like gonna kill us or something. So we started walking out of Phoenix, and we ended up hitchhiking across the country. And that was interesting too. A lot of crazy things, man. I don't regret ever doing that, because it was a really good experience. And I don't recommend anybody do that either, because it was scary, man. It was scary sometimes, believe me. But it's kind of weird, like, when you put yourself out there in the flow, like, you don't have any plans and you don't know what's going to happen next. And sometimes some crazy stuff happens. But then sometimes I also saw, like, now that I look back on it, I saw a lot of God reaching out to help me stay alive on that journey, because we didn't have anything except for our hands out, and people like helped us throughout the whole trip, man. They kept us alive and they kept us safe, and that could have only been God, you know. And so we ended up like, the way we ended up in Florida was we met these hippie guys who were going to Ocala for this rainbow gathering. I don't know if y'all ever heard of that, but it's crazy wild fun, man. A bunch of hippies running around out in the woods, you know, a bunch of tripping hippies. And so we caught a ride with this big van full of them, you know, and we were like, yeah. So we did that, and that's how we came to Florida. And then while we were there, you know, we met some cool people who lived out in Lithia, out in the country on this horse ranch, and they offered to give us a little place because they heard our story and they felt bad for us. And we were burnt out by that time. Like, we didn't want anything but, like, to sleep and, like, a place to cook some macaroni and cheese or something, you know. That's all we wanted, man. And so this guy, like, totally put us up. And, you know, it's another thing, like, I've met these people along the way, along my journey, that have helped me so much, man. And it can only be God working through these people, because even in my alcoholism, right when I feel like I was on the brink of, like, dying or getting sick or unhealthy, these people would come into my life that would take us in and heal us, you know. And we actually were, my girl was really sick when they took us in. She had like 104 degree temperature and stuff, and I don't know if she would have even lived if they wouldn't have took us in. So these things I pay attention to now when I look back on it. And anyway, man, so we started off trying to get our life it's always like, by this point, man, I'm like 25 years old. I've been drinking for like 14 years or something, and I'm like, and I've been to AA meetings, and I know that I'm an alcoholic, and so, like, I keep wanting to get clean, man. I keep wanting to get sober, man. Like, I want to stop drinking. I don't want to do this anymore. And so every time we get this opportunity, that's what I would tell myself, you know. But I didn't go to meetings or anything. I would just try to will it on my own, and it never worked, man. And the same thing always kept happening. So here I am, 3,000 miles away, and very happy that my California warrants didn't follow me. You know, I'm like straight, man. Like, I got pulled over, and they said that you have warrants, but they're non-extraditable. So I'm cool. This is the perfect opportunity to start over, you know. And man, I'll be damned if I didn't go catch another handful of felonies, you know. Right here in Hillsborough County at the horse ranch, you know, like, where there's not even any trouble to get into. I got into some trouble, man, and it was a bad thing, man. I got violent and with my girlfriend, and I ended up in jail, and it was really bad. And she ended up leaving me, and when I got out of jail, I was like, oh man, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Like, I can't even go back to California because they let me out on probation. Like, I always take the probation deal because I want to get out, you know. And so they let me out, and now, like, my girl, who's like my lifeline, she left me, and she actually has a restraining order against me, so I cannot go over there. So the only thing I can do is be in Tampa and try to, like, you know, do what I can do in Tampa. But now I'm on probation and all this, so I was like really stuck, and I didn't know what to do. So I got a job, and I ended up actually making stuff happen, you know. Like, I was drinking, and I was drinking alcoholically, but I still, like, was able to keep my job and put things together. And I met another girl who, like, luckily, I meet these girls, and I just, like, put all my issues on them, and they just, like, take care of me, you know. And that's, like, what she did for me over the next couple years. Until she couldn't have enough, until she had had enough with me, and she left me, of course, too, you know, because she wasn't an alcoholic and I was. And when I'm abusive, man, I am an abusive, lying, cheating, stealing person when I drink, man. Like, there's no other way around it. That's who I am. And I'm manipulative, and I don't care about anybody, and I would, like, step on you until you, like, literally cannot take it anymore, you know. And so that's what I did, you know. That's what I do over and over and over. That's what I did to my new girl. It's almost like I would treat these women like they were my mom, you know. Like, I'd find a woman to love me and then step all over and just wring her dry, you know. So that's what happened with her. I guess that brings me up to the point where I got locked up for this last time. I caught another felony, a big felony, in 2009, and this is like a big turning point in my life here, because there's a guy who set me up with the police, you know. And these are also the kind of friends that I have. my friend that I let sleep on my couch and stuff, like, he turned me into the police and got me arrested. And so it ended up being a really big charge, and I was sitting in jail for a year. And while I was in jail, I actually met a couple of these nice young men in here who brought meetings into jail, you know. And I was going to meetings and stuff, and I was working out, and actually, like, that year was a really good year for me, looking back on it. Yeah, seriously, because I was so bad off that I was actually better off. I was so unhealthy and like miserable and disgusting before I got locked up that being locked up and sober like was a relief to me, you know, because I had got to the point in my drinking that like, man, like I did not want to feel anything. I hated myself, man. I was like looking at myself in the mirror, and if I looked at myself long enough in the mirror, I would get violent with the mirror because I hated myself that bad, you know. It was like I hate hatred for myself. And so when I was in jail, man, I started eating regularly, and I gained a little weight, and it just felt good, man. And I was going to these meetings and this and that, and they got me praying and everything. So by the time I got out of jail a year later, I was feeling pretty good about myself, man. I can remember looking in the mirror before I left jail and just like being happy with the person I saw, you know. And I had hope in my heart, and I knew that I was going to make it. So the day I got out of jail, you know, I'm like walking up, down, and again, once I get out of jail, I'm like hit with this big pressure because I don't know what I'm going to do, man, because now like I took the probation deal again, and they gave me a deal because I did like a year, and then they gave me 3 years probation, which is better than going to prison in my eyes, you know. But still, I like kind of set myself up because I got out with like nothing to, no kind of stability in my life, you know, and I had to report to PO and do all this and that. So the pressure builds up on me until I walked about a block up the road and went into the liquor store and got that beer. And it was like this, man. Like in my head, it's like, okay, what am I gonna? I gotta get my girlfriend back. Like I gotta go report to my PO. How am I gonna make money? Fuck. This is that. I go until I get to the. I get the beer. Go to the dumpster. Crack it. Down it. And it's like, ah. Everything is gone, man. All the voices in my head are gone, and the good feeling has returned. And like I'm like, no, man, I have to drink. You know, there's no other way to deal with this pressure besides drinking. That's like what I decided. So I drank, man. And it was crazy because my mom had fronted me a little bit of money, so I was in a hotel. And I was like, I woke up one morning after drinking, and I didn't have a tolerance, you know, so I was drinking like I used to, and it just took a toll on me. And I woke up in the morning, and I looked in the mirror, and I looked at a man that I hated again. And this is the same man who, like, a week ago, I loved who I was looking at, and now I'm, like, looking at myself, like, literally, man, I had a big knot on my forehead from getting into a fight. My eyes were bloodshot, you know, I stink, like, my hair is, like, all sweaty and stuff. And, like, I'm looking at myself, like, man, what has happened to me in 1 week? So it was disgusting, man. And the other thing is, like, I had to check in with my PO, and I was dirty, man. Like, I had to go walk into this PO, and I'm like, and I hate being locked up. Like, I know I said that everything was good, but really, like, there's no place on earth that I would less like to be than locked up, you know what I mean? And if I turn in a dirty test or something to my PO, I get locked up for a long time, man. And I don't even care about that because I still risk that with drinking, you know? That's how powerful this disease is to me. So that's how I was feeling when I remembered these guys who brought the meetings into jail. And I was like, okay, man, this is my only hope, dude. This is the only hope I have, is to go to this meeting, is to go to an AA meeting. Maybe they can save me, you know, because I can't save myself. And I walked into that meeting, and coincidentally, I ran into this man who had sponsored, like, a couple years ago, my girlfriend made me come to meetings because she was like at her wit's end with me, and I promised her I was going to get sober. So she brought me to these meetings, and like I fake worked the step with this guy, and I met him in this room, you know. And I ran into that same man like with like the first day that I went back to AA. Excuse me. Ran into that same man, and I don't believe in coincidences. And I think coincidences are things that we think are coincidences. These are the things, these are like the things we need to be aware of and pay attention to, because that's God working in our life. And so it's no coincidence I ran into this man, and he saw like the desperation in my face, and he did what y'all did, what you guys do, and he held his hand out to me. And he was like, basically, man, you look like shit. And and I was like, well, I feel like it. Excuse my language, by the way. And I was like, I feel like it, man. And he was like, so what are you going to do about it? And I was like, I don't know, man. I have no idea what I'm going to do about it, you know? And he's like, well, why don't you let me take you through a couple steps, you know? Why don't you just give me a call tonight? And I think he just left it as simple as that. Why don't you just give me a phone call tonight, you know? And so I went back to the hotel and I gave him a call. And like he started giving me these like weird little assignments, like call. He made me call people like that I don't know. He made me call two people that I don't know. And I hated that, man. It was so hard to call somebody I don't know and be like, hey, how's it going, man? And then he'd be like, hey, how's it going? My name's Dan. Oh, okay. My name's Greg. Okay, cool. You know, so it feels like, what am I doing, man? What am I doing? But I did it, man, because I was desperate, man. I was desperate. I would have done it. I would have licked his shoes if he told me to lick his shoes, man. Seriously, I would have. I promise you. And so, but he didn't make me do that, man. But he made me do some crazy... He didn't make me do that, but he made me do some stuff, you know, and but man, the things, the little actions that he had me do, like miraculously, this is a miracle. Like, how did I make it through that first night without drinking? The only thing I did differently was call this person that he told me to call. And then the next night, like, I've been trying for, now I've been drinking for like almost 20 years or something. I've been trying that whole time to not drink, but I haven't been able to for one day until this guy tells me these little simple things to do. And by doing them, I made it through day, like a day and then another day without drinking, man. And it's very miraculous how this thing has worked for me, because it's just, I still can't even like imagine that I'm sober standing here talking to people right now. It doesn't make any sense in my head, but it's true and it's happening. And so I just lost myself. So he took me through the steps, and it was awesome. Him taking me through the steps was amazing, man. Like, it was cool. Like, the first three steps we did really quick, and they were so easy. They're my favorite steps, because all we did was sit there and talk, you know? And I just said a prayer, and I got on my knees. That was a little weird. Like, I felt weird, uncomfortable praying with him, but it was cool, man. And then after the third step is when he got me in the habit of praying, and he got me in the habit of praying to let go of my own will, and like God smash my ego and help me to live by your will instead of mine. And these are things that I like I told you, I'm going to do anything that he tells me to do. So I did it, but I didn't believe in it, man, because my ego is like, what? I'm a survivor, man. Like, I walk down the street across the country, you know, and survive. And so this is what I'm thinking in my head. Like, it wasn't even me who was surviving. Like I said earlier, it was God putting these people in my life to help me. But I think it's all me, you know. And so I had a real hard time with the thought that I had to let go of my ego, man, because that's my power, you know, my inner power. And but I still prayed for it to be smashed, because that's what he told me to do. And so, yeah, that was really cool, man. I've never strayed from what he told me. He got me on the road praying every morning and every night, give thanks every night. And, you know, I have yet to miss a day, because, like, I love it now, you know. It's nice talking to God. And we moved on to the fourth step and the fifth step, and that sucked, you know. I had some, the hardest part about it, the resentments were awesome, dude, because I got to think about, like, who am I resentful for, you know? And I have so many people, the police, the jail guards, man, you know, like all these people I'm resentful for, you know, and that was cool. But then, like, the fears, like, I realized I'm very, very scared, man, you know, like, I have a lot of fears. I'm pretty much scared of everything. So that sucked. And what really sucked was when he told me I had to tell him three things I was going to take to the grave with me. And, oh, man, there was some real, and then he pointed it out in the part in the big book where it says, if we don't do it thoroughly, then it might not work. Something like that. I know those aren't the words, but it was basically, that's what it said, you know, like, you got to do this step thoroughly, you know, or you might miss out on some of the benefits it has to offer. So, like, I was thinking about that, and I told him these three things, and there were things that, like, I don't know, I just never thought I would be able to tell anybody, but I did. And so, as a result of that, you know, after I did my fifth step, it was a really, like, relieving, beautiful experience, man. I felt like a huge weight had been lifted off my shoulders, and it was. And then I did the six-step and seven-step meditation, and that was awesome. You know, I called them after I was done with it, and I told them that I felt like I had been hallucinating for like the last hour, you know, and because the time went by so quick for me. And he was like, oh, that's cool. I've gone on rants to my sponsor where he just like gives me short answers afterwards. And whenever he gives me a short answer, I know that he's in his head. He must be thinking, man, this guy's going off on some stupid stuff right now. Because I go on rants sometimes. So it worked great. I got up to my eighth and ninth step. And then I hesitated on making my amends. I made the list of my amends, but there were some scary amends, you know, and I'm only dealing with my Florida amends. I've only been in Florida 5 years, and those are scary amends. The people I've robbed and stolen from, I'm scared I want to go back to jail or something, you know. And so I ended up relapsing over that, you know, which, like, looking back on it, man, maybe me pausing on making my amends is the reason why I relapsed, you know, maybe. And so after I relapsed, he kind of helped me get back on my feet, and we picked right up where we left off, which I thought was awesome. I ended up doing the same exact thing for the next month and then relapsing again because I'm hard-headed like that. And then we kind of brushed myself off and then got sober again. And then I've actually been sober since that day. It was August 15th of 2010. So since then, some real progress has been made, you know. I ended up doing my amends. They were amazing, beautiful experiences. And about that time, I got 90 days. I had about 90 days sober. And what happened was these warrants that I had in California caught up with me. And I ended up having to, like, face them. And I got this notice in the mail saying that the warrants are now being turned federal. 5 years has passed, and they could either decide to throw them out or make them federal and pursue them. And they decided to make them federal and pursue them. So I was like, dang, that sucks, man. What do I do? You know? Now I got federal warrants, and I'm like, you know how you are when you're 90 days sober, man. Life should be going good for me right now. I should not have to be going to jail or dealing with this. And my sponsor was like, well, this is just stuff you did in the past catching up with you, you know. So I was like, what do I do, Bill? Hoping that he was going to tell me, run. Go to Mexico, man. But nah, he told me, why don't you go take it to your probation officer and see what she has to say about it. So I took it to my probation officer. I took this letter. And she's like, Danny, unfortunately, you have to turn yourself into jail. And you have to turn yourself into me. And she gave me like a day to do it. And this is where the fellowship, man, and by the way, when I was first getting sober, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, there's no way I could have stayed sober without you guys, you know? These people showed up for me, and the people that I called, those two phone calls I had to make, they turned out to be my best friends, and they were, like, there by my side so much, and so they just saved me through so many things, man. They gave me a life, you know, when I felt crazy, and I felt like a loner and like a useless piece of crap, like they pretended that I wasn't and they pretended that I was a good guy, you know. And I know that they were just doing their job by hanging out with me, but at the time I felt like they really liked me. So anyway, man, these people again showed up for me when I was turning myself into jail, and I would not have made it at 90 days sober. I'd never have walked into that place and been like this, you know, take me. No way, man. But my friends were there, and they protected me, and they made me strong, and we went in there together. We went in there four deep to the probation office, you know, and my PO was like, she'd never seen anything like this, man. Like, four grown men, like, kind of teary-eyed, saying goodbye to Danny V, you know, and it was, she had never seen anything like it. Things like this have given AA a really good impression, because my probation officer, she really saw AA work in my life, and so I know that she is, like, on promoting AA to her clients now, because she's seen it work in people's lives, man. Judges have seen it work. So many people have seen AA work. So I turned myself in with the intention that, of course, like, if they were going to make all these warrants federal, then of course they're going to ship me back to California, and I'm going to have to go do my time out there. I even got my family, my mom, I helped get a lawyer, and the lawyer's like, yeah, man, like, you ran from felony warrants, right? And then you committed, like, what, five more felonies in the meantime? That's what people go to prison for. You know, that's the way he broke it down to me. And so he was like, I'm going to do my best for you, but don't be thinking that you're going to get skate off with this, you know. So that's like the mentality I had. But, you know, my sponsor had really coached me on like, you're going to be where God wants you to be. And remember, you're not controlling your will anymore. So if you're really going to give your will up, then this is what's happening right now. This is where God wants you to be. And maybe there's going to be somebody who you're going to reach and touch in prison. So that's the mentality that I had. Anyway, 5 days later, they say, Danny V, roll it up. And they didn't really say it like that. They said, Valkoski, roll it up. That's how they said it. And I was, it was like 4:30 in the morning, man. And I got, and I was like, oh my God, dude, they're kicking me out of jail. And I didn't argue with them or anything. I just got, I rolled it up and I was gone, man. Walking down the Orient, you know, with a plastic bag over my shoulder at 4:30 in the morning. And, I ended up like burning time. I didn't drink this time because I was on like a mad spiritual high. You know, like, oh my God, I'm supposed to be getting locked up right now. I'm supposed to be locked up right now and I'm not. I was like feeling so good, man. And so I called my, you know, my sponsor's wife came and picked me up at like 6 when it was still dark out or something. That's the type of people, you know, they are. And It was awesome, man. We were all like rejoicing. I was free, you know. And at the outcome of that situation ended up being they put me on an ankle monitor to do time. You know, they sentenced me to jail time in California, and then put me on an ankle monitor. They mailed it out to me, so I was already on probation here. You know, real strict probation. So now all I got to do is strap this thing on my foot and stay at my house, you know, and they let me work and they let me go to meetings. And so it really was like minimal inconvenience for me. And I still got credit for doing time, you know, like this is like a gift that God handed down to me, because I could be doing time right now. And I even got sentenced to time, and somehow they worked it out so I could do it on the ankle monitor. So I'm like on probation and on the ankle monitor at the same time. Two different states, and life is good, man, you know? Life is good, seriously. Like, I never, you know, I felt better then than I ever had in my whole life, ever. And I'm running out of time. You know, life continued to be good, and I made a lot of progress, I think. You know, I got off probation, you know, maybe like in November I got off probation. I had to go to court to get early termination, and he granted it to me, no problem. And I walked out of that courtroom a free man, you know, and I hadn't been a free man. Like, and I'm talking about, I don't have any warrants in California, and I'm not on probation here, so I was really a free man. And it's one of the best feelings I've ever had, you know. Being free, that's all I've ever wanted, is to be free. And this program has shown me how to really be free. I've made a lot of kind of growth, and a lot of changes have happened to me since I first got sober. I used to rely only on my people and my fellows to bring me happiness. But my sponsor kind of guided me in the direction of like, you know, happiness is one thing, but true joy and true like bliss comes from God, only God. And that is the only source that you can get this from, this bliss. And so once I started like kind of like, you know, there comes a point where you're really not craving alcohol anymore, and you know, the obsession leaves you. And so I started working on just getting closer to God, and meditation has been like my number one outlet on. It's been like the biggest, strongest thing working in my life right now. I started meditating when I was on house arrest. I just sat down. I got a book and read about it, and then sat down. And my friend out in California makes music, and he sent me a little meditation CD. And I would just kind of zone out, you know. And since then, it's really grown and developed into something like that. You'd have to kill me before you could stop me from meditating, you know. Like it's so important to me right now. And it's given me an inner calmness and kind of just assurance that like everything's okay, you know. And beyond really all what meditation's done is it's put me kind of a direct contact between me and God. And God's done all these things for me, you know. Like God's given me this assurance that everything's going to be okay. God has made me free right now. And through God, I can actually like feel happy, and I can look in the mirror and see a man that I love again, you know. And I mean, wow, there's just like so many so many things that God has done for me, and so many new directions that I'm taking in life now. A couple more things I want to touch on real quick. This is a big thing that happened in my, like, it was really big. It was cool. The guy who snitched on me when I got locked up, my homie who snitched on me, and then I got locked up for that year. When I got out, that was like my main resentment. Like, I'm just gonna kill this guy. I even wrote a song about it, man. Like, when I was in jail, about how I was gonna kill this guy. Like, this guy was dead, right? Seriously. And like, because he snitched on me and got me locked up for a year, and it was my homie, man. You know, like, of course. So my sponsor was like, well, well, that turns out that guy is actually a spiritual messenger, you know, and he called this guy a spiritual messenger in my life. And at the time, I was like, I did not want to hear that, man. How is this guy? So I have to forgive this guy. And my sponsor said, no, actually, there's going to come a time when you're going to want to thank this guy, because, you know, if it wasn't for him setting this chain of events in your life, then you wouldn't be where you're at today. And so somewhere along the line, I actually did come to the point where if I run into this guy again, I will thank him and give him a hug for what he did for me, which is like, you know, because he set this off, and I'm sober now because of him. And yeah, so that was one really cool thing that happened. The next thing is I'm finally, like, you know, sitting here free and contemplating what I want to do in my life. And so I decided to move to California. And like in 2 weeks, I'm going to be packing up my bags and loading it into a minivan and driving across the country with my dad. And me and my dad fell off a long time ago, you know, like he gave up on me when I was 15, you know. But in the last couple of years, he's started to come around and stuff. And we're going to make this big journey together. And I'm speechless that my father is actually going to do this, you know, and he doesn't even necessarily support, like, what I'm doing, you know, because he likes me being in Tampa because I'm comfortable, I have a job, you know, rent's cheap here, and I'm, like, quitting my job and moving to the most expensive state in the country with no plan. I got kind of a plan, but he's supporting me on it, you know, and that comes back to, like, I would think that I should be scared, like, about this, and I am kind of scared about this move, but I found that, like, when the faith in God will overcome any fear, and that's what I've really learned with this situation, because I have faith, like, I know with all my heart that when I get out there, if I keep doing the right thing, like what I've been shown how to do, there's just no way to fail. There's no way to fail because God will not let me fail. It won't happen. God has taken me so far through so many different things that he's going to continue to do that. And so just knowing that gives me like an inner calmness about this big move that I'm about to make. And, you know, I thank God for that. And I'm just going to continue to keep my faith. And I just want to take this moment to, like, thank you guys, you know, because, man, like, Tampa, Florida, and Alcoholics Anonymous has literally saved my life, you know, and I'm so grateful that God put me in this place with these people. And there's so many people in this room who were there. I mean, there's people in this room who were in jail with me, you know, like, brought meetings into jail with me. They go that far back, you know, and so it's obviously like God working. And I'm just very grateful to you people, and I just want to say that I love you and thank you. And if I don't see you before I leave, like, a piece of my heart and soul will be staying here with you, and I'll be taking a piece of all y'all to California with me. So that's all I got to say is thank you, and I love you.